y'all.
Hey.
Welcome to Ants, Humans, Stars. I'm Digo, a digital nomad. Over here in this corner, standing at 168 pounds, Caleb!
Yes! Artist with a story to tell who wishes he was 168 pounds. Yes! Yes, that's me. I'm here.
And hello. We have our special recording today on Ecoside.
Ecoside, okay.
And I'm just letting you know this in this moment, and Caleb will cover.
I only have one question for you. Uh-huh. What's love got to do with it?
What's love got to do? Got to do with it. What's love? Okay.
Yes.
All right. But before we go down these rabbit holes, We finally saw the Zack Snyder cut. You can feel free to turn off this station, this episode, if you don't.
No, you need to. You need to keep Zack it on Snyder, here. Okay?
If you hate superheroes, but I, to my right, I have a Batman figurine. Okay, right, so I'm team Marvel and team DC at the same time.
Same here.
And
as I have my Storm shirt on, which you guys can.
That's right. That's right.
Well, those of you listening can't see, but I have a Storm shirt on right now. Storm from X-Men Marvel. Okay.
But in a quick like summary, I am very disappointed in the recent years of DC.
Yes.
And agreed. I wish to see a Batman that I can look up to.
Yes. Agreed. Agreed.
We had three good movies. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I would appreciate more. And Superman, we've never had one.
Never. Ever.
And we don't need Superman and Batman.
We also, we also don't need
either. But it's
because
quite
we've had so many.
It's of true. Them. But we don't have enough of them to say, like, oh, let me binge seven Superman movies that are amazing. Like, the old ones, they're cool, but it's just like watching the old Bond movies. They're kind of like, it's nice, and I love them, but they're not like, cool, man, put on the Superman 5, you know, like, action-packed. It is, but, I mean, you can see the wires. And then Batman, I love the 90s. I really love Michael Keaton. I will rewatch those over and over. I love it. I love the feeling. I love the flavor, but there's only two. I discount the rest of them. Then What's-His-Face stepped into the picture, saved the day a little bit. What's his name?
Christian Bale.
American Psycho.
Christian Bale.
But unfortunately, it's wrapped up with director, producer.
When Digo needs to figure out what a celebrity's name is, I'm the friend he phones. So when y'all see him on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, just know I will be the person he calls.
Hello.
Exactly.
This is Who Wants to Be. Just put him on the phone. I know.
Exactly. What's the black lady with a talk show? Oprah. Thank you.
Anywho, so we're here with Batman of today, and we're here with Superman of today. They both suck. I don't think so. Wonder Woman, I think, is great. 84, I think, sucked. And what else we have? The new black dude, which
we have Cyborg.
You have met in person.
Yes, I'm a friend. Shout out to Ray Fisher. Ray's awesome. He's a great guy.
London, so Canada?
No. I hung out with Ray in Italy.
In Italy.
I was over there, yeah, with my cousin. He was over there performing. Ray was also over there, and we hung out all day, went to like museums and stuff. It was cool. Great guy. I stand with Ray Fisher, by the way.
Oh, cool. Me too. Yeah. I finally read up on that whole thing, and of course it makes sense. Yeah. And if it makes sense all the way around. No data on the Flash, and What's-His-Face can die in a fire. Guy from the water.
No!
I don't care about him. But you know what? It's a double thing, because I don't care about the actual like superhero, nor do I care about the actor at all. So it's
you're right. I don't care about either, but he just seems like a very nice guy, and he's gorgeous. Okay.
I like how he was part of the movie, and what movie we're talking about is
Zack Snyder's Justice League.
We're going to just rip that apart real quick before we go into our rabbit holes.
Yes.
I appreciate, though, his involvement in it, because I do feel the movie was, I cannot believe I'm saying this, balanced and well done. I cannot. I'm watching the movie 2 hours in and I'm like, fucking cannot believe I'm in love with this. I cannot. I'm mad that I like this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, why is this movie so good? I don't get this. I don't get why the plot is pretty good and the character development is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And everything. Of course, they could have done with a little less slow-mo. But other than that, I felt like it was done.
Yeah.
Well.
I thought it was... And yes, they had 4 hours. So yes, they had more time to flesh things out. But I liked it. It was so... Mm-hmm. It was everything I wanted Justice League to be. Where there was... not only fleshed out characters and storylines and all that, it was not all about Superman and Batman, because I get sick of that. And that's not just something that DC does. Like, I think we've talked about this. That is something that, like, across the board, like, when it comes to Marvel, they only want to focus on Captain America and Iron Man. Or in X-Men, they only want to focus on Wolverine and Magneto. For some reason, these Hollywood producers can't, like, focus on a team. They're like, oh, no, only two! Only two people. So I like that it was more than Batman and Superman. Also, I like that it was perfect setup for what's to come. Well, it's apparently not going to come because Warner Brothers is like, oh, we're done with Zack Snyder. But it perfectly set up, yeah, something to come in future movies and not like some cheesy cliffhanger. It was like, oh, I'm seeing a full picture of a full world. Also, I love the incorporation of Martian Manhunter.
That's right.
I also, I'm going to say it. As a black man, I was happy that the alien was black because I get sick of them making all these aliens. And I'm like, why are the aliens are white people? Like, you could give that part to an Indian man or like an Asian man. Like, why? So anyways, that was nice to see as well. It was done. I thought it was good. It was really good. Yes, it was long. Yes, there was some unneeded parts. But
the thing is, I think it needed to be those 4 hours. I mean, you have all those characters, and you're telling me you want to tell a story? You didn't have the luxury of Marvel's 40 movies before Avenger came out.
Exactly.
You didn't have to explain it because you already did in multiple movies. But no, we didn't have all of the Flash movies and... The Cyborg movie, all these weren't there, and they just had to come up with these. The Cyborg storyline, didn't see that coming at all. See that as part of them. I thought he was just going to be some guy with some lasers coming out of his eyes supporting the movie in a very background way. No, it's about Cyborg.
Exactly.
You could argue that
the whole
movie is about him.
Seriously. Also, am I wrong for thinking that, and I know we've had this conversation before, but because, yes, they haven't had the 30 plus movies like Marvel to set things up, we really don't need that because we all know about Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. So really all you got to do is focus on the other characters that nobody knows about, like Cyborg, Flash, Aquaman, Martian Manhunter, anybody else you want to add. Like, I feel like they actually have it easy because everybody, whether you hate superheroes or not, or know about superheroes, everybody knows about Superman, Batman, and more than likely Wonder Woman. Like, you've heard of her at some point. Mm-hmm. I feel like it was easier. They had an easier route because you have established characters that are woven into the fabric of like our society, especially here in American society and just across the world. So
I will also say I appreciated Wonder Woman's action sequences in Justice League more the entirety of all of 84. Like, they could have just had that clip where she fought that scene and that's the movie of Wonder Woman 84, and I would have been happy. It was like
with the bullets,
she's like, and the and then she and everything, and it's amazing. I just felt like her presence was not put down.
Yeah,
right. Oh, she's the female character, she'll be put. No, she was strong. Everything, and so that was good. And what else? What about the baddies? I forget what they look like. I mean, I know the main one.
Those little parademons. I think that's what they're called.
Oh, the guy with the okay. So it was like henchman boss, and there was like super boss.
Oh, Darkseid. Right. Oh, but you're talking about the guy. What was his name?
With the metal.
Yeah. I don't even know.
Whatever that guy was, but yeah, he was like was, reporting to Darkseid, and then
to Darkseid. Yeah.
The little dynamic between him trying to have to prove himself and everything, even that you're developing a plot, a character, and everything off the henchman. Who cares about that? And you're doing it. I like it. I like it that you would bring so much flavor into it, and it just kept me there for 4 hours. That's how you do it.
Yeah, I also liked that. It was different motivation. Whereas, I mean, even though Darkseid's motivation is the classic, I just want to rule the world and everybody bow to me. But the fact that, like, his motivation was I'm trying to prove myself and atone or whatever for whatever he did in the past. It was like, oh, okay, this is... Because it adds to that, like, oh, yeah, you're just going to do whatever you have to do to get this daddy's approval, essentially. Yeah, so I liked that. Because I don't think a lot of villain, aside from like Killmonger and Black Panther, aside from, you know, there's a few others here and there, the villains don't really have strong motivation for why they're doing what they're doing. It's just.
Yeah. And in Batman, they usually just say, oh, it's kind of crazy.
Exactly. literally. Everybody in Gotham is crazy.
I was going to say something about... let's see. Oh, okay. So you were saying about... that it was great, and I agree that their focus was on the other characters, quote-unquote, the B team. The A team being, you know, Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. B team being everybody else. And then, though I did appreciate... how, you know, in the end, who cares about spoiler warning? Who cares? Superman comes back to life. Okay, right? All right. Who gives a shit? You know he was coming back to life.
You knew
he's
that.
All over in the he's wearing his fucking slick ass black ass uniform. Anyways, he comes in. I have never felt so proud for Superman to come back in. You know, you felt it. You were like,
exactly.
You were like, he is not necessary the entire movie, but goddamn, thank God he's coming in. And he comes in and he comes in so slick. You're like thinking everybody's gonna die, and it's just like the end, and you're waiting. And it's that final strike, and Superman just comes and goes.
It just stands.
Need me? Miss
exactly.
Me? Boom! And he just does his Superman thing, and it was all 5 minutes, and it was perfect. It was Superman can save the day, and it literally only takes like 5 minutes. It's not a whole fucking movie of him fighting and like struggling. No, it's Superman. He has an awesome wield of power, and it was nice to see it and how it would really play out. He's just gonna come in, take care of business, boom, it's done. No drama, no kryptonite out of nowhere. It's just him just beating ass, and it was nice. That was the right amount of Superman, and I was surprised that I was really comfy with it.
But you know what? Even more than that, yes, I 100% agree with everything you just said. But I love that even though in a sense he kind of saved the day, he didn't save the day. Like, even him getting there and stopping, you know, the guy from chopping Cyborg's head off, that wasn't the end. Like, you still needed Flash. You needed Cyborg to do what he did. And so I love that it wasn't this... Because that's the one thing I hate about Superman. I hate the idea of this one superhero that's just so powerful and he can do everything. And it's just like, eh. I loved that. I was so happy when he came in. And it was like, yes, somebody who is just going to, you know, kick this guy's ass. Like, and it's going to be great. But also the fact that it was like, oh, no, but you need these other teammates. Like, you alone with your super strength and your laser eyes cannot just
He could make have flown around perfect. The world and reverse time, but let's save that for another day.
Technically, yes. Technically,
he didn't know he had that power yet. But, he hadn't read the manual yet in the room where he got the suit.
But he needed that charge. Cyborg needed that charge. And could Superman have given him that charge that Flash did?
He could have, you know, just think of something.
I know. It's superheroes.
It's superheroes. Think of something. Yeah. He goes grab some nuclear power plant throws in his face.
But it was great.
The bottom line is, I'm fucking surprised that I went to a movie. I saw it here at house. I keep forgetting we're in pandemic. And just was so... I could rewatch it. That's another thing. I could rewatch that movie, which so many of these movies that they churn out with Superman or whatever, I would never watch that ever again. Don't want to. And so it's a rewatchable film. I understand about the whole 4:3. I would have preferred it in 16:9 letterbox. But other than that, I'm willing to let it slide. And who gives a shit? Let's get an old timey TV and watch the.
Even that didn't bother me. I was just
really. It's whatever.
And again, I think it goes back to what started the conversation, is that I literally just watch movies to be entertained and to get out of my world. Like, I don't watch movies with, I think some people watch movies and they're like overly critiquing it of, and again, yes, there are some very bad movies, but like all of these Marvel movies, the Godzilla movies, DC movies, like even stuff like Alien, like I'm just watching these for the pure entertainment of watching somebody deal with aliens and beings and creatures that I don't have in my world, and I don't have to deal with, I don't have to think about. Like,
there's the entire thriller and drama section where you can watch stuff that resembles real life.
Exactly.
And I know that was really cool to incorporate that into the, like, for example, Christopher Nolan's Batman, the realism. Honestly, I'm done with that, and I think we're done with realism. I'm saying, like, as an era, like we went from, you know, hunky dory. You know, James Bond gonna save you, and he's like holding a martini, to like struggling and beating and the blood and the ripping. Same thing like happened to Batman. In this, I think you can argue this was all from the Bourne Identity. Anywho, it happened across the board. Everything was realism. We don't want to see Tom Cruise and it be funny in Mission Impossible. We want to see the grit of it. Maybe, who knows, we'll see, the full circle of coming back to, I think I want Michael Keaton, to be honest, and, you know, the Tim Burton kind of effect here. I don't want to be in the movie where it's real. I want you to take me from here. I want you to take me to a fantasy, because that's what this is. It's not real life. There's no Superman. There's no take me away. And I think Zack Snyder's took me away. It was not of this world. It wasn't trying to just hold on to like feelings and how this and the drama. No, it was like superhero crap. It was superhero stuff. It was saving the world. It felt really big. And congratulations, DC, for doing something.
Because I feel like the Marvel movies are just pure fantasy. I don't feel like there's a lot of realism in Marvel movies at all. Like, it is all just bright colors and aliens and tear down buildings and no one died. That's kind of how anyways, I'm saying that to say that that's why I looked at the Zack Snyder, to have a little bit of realness as opposed to just all the glitz and glam of superhero world that I feel like I get when I watch Marvel movies.
I do recommend those that are listening, go watch WandaVision. Okay.
You watched it? I didn't even know you watched. Okay. Yes. WandaVision was great.
Definitely fantastic. Get into WandaVision, Zack Snyder's Justice League, Raya.
And Raya, yes.
Raya the Last Dragon.
However she pronounced her name. That was great.
Yes. Those are great movies to watch. Lucky you if you can get to a movie theater. Just like me, I can get to one, but maybe where you are, you can't. But don't worry, there's pirating.
Wait, I love my... Wait a minute. He said, don't worry, there's pirating. That was like, don't worry, kids. If you don't have money for it, they're stealing.
Just steal.
What? It's true.
As previously mentioned, we're going to cover... Ecocide and What's Love Got to Do with It by Tina Turner.
Y'all give him a round of applause. He got that name right. Like, and that wasn't even like a long pause. Like, he said it slowly, but like it all came out. Like, his mind was like, we got the information. Send it down.
Like, I was like 100 here, fucking 1% here. You know, like when it drifted out, I was like, it could very well. I was like, is it like Diana Ross or something? Like,
completely off. No, we are going to revel in that moment that you got it right completely. Okay. And awesome. And utterly.
Awesome. Would you like to go first?
Yeah, I can.
Okay.
All right. I believe wholeheartedly in giving people their flowers while they can smell them. That is why I picked this song to do today. I watched her documentary on HBO. You should definitely go watch it. It's just great.
Is it recent or just?
It's recent. Yeah. Literally came out like 2 weeks ago.
Oh,
yeah. It's on HBO Max. I watched it. I watched it for the second time this past weekend because I wanted my mom to see it. So I watched it again with her. I wanted to see it again. I'm probably going to watch it again for a third time because it was just so many gems and just really great. She has lived a life that has not been easy, but she's just risen above it all to it's incredible. I definitely would suggest checking it out. So because of that, I also just love her, period. I've loved Tina Turner. So actually, I bought a record. Me and Digo, for those listening, I went to the record store with Digo. And if you ever go to the store with Digo and he is your friend, just be prepared. He's just going to convince you to buy whatever it is that you want. There is no like
I don't remember I don't remember this specifically. Like, maybe I remember you buying a record, but I definitely can agree that whatever I did in that situation was say, just get it.
Just get it. Exactly. That's literally what happened. And so I saw this Tina Turner record in the record store, and it was for an album. It was for one of her albums that I thought that I only liked three songs on it. It's the album that has her song "Simply the Best," better than all the rest. So, anyways, and I got the album, even though I thought I only liked three songs on it. And in doing all this research, I've been listening more Tina music. And anyways, that album from top to bottom is like amazing. And so, thank you to you for encouraging me to get it, because now I have it on vinyl and I'm proud of that. So I've loved Tina Turner for a long time, and I just wanted to highlight the icon, the legend, the queen of rock and roll. She's simply the best, Miss Tina Turner. So if you don't know anything about Tina Turner, you should Google her. Mm-hmm. And educate yourself, but I'll give you a quick catch up. She was born Anna Mae Bullock in 1939 in Brownsville, Tennessee. And she had a tough childhood. Her parents were abusive to each other. Her mom left when she was 11. She just got sick of dealing with the abuse and stuff and just left. Then when her dad remarried 2 years later, her dad just left. And so her and her sisters went to stay with her grandparents, where she grew up singing in the Baptist church. She's going to experience even more, but she had already experienced some tough things just as a start out. When it came to her music career, she started as half of the duo Ike and Tina in the 60s. And their biggest hit came in 1971 with the song Proud Mary. And so she was, with Ike for, she was married to him for 16 years. She divorced him and left their group in 1976 because she was, so Ike used to beat her, for those who don't know. He was extremely physically abusive.
One of the most famous abusive relationships in like famous people history, like people know of this Ike and Tina Turner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I don't know the specifics, so I would like to know more about the backstory of
it's
not yeah, necessarily it, right now from you, but maybe in like
I'm not gonna say it. I will say though that in watching the documentary, and something I didn't realize, because she came out with a movie, she's put out a book about her life, and her life, even though I'm going to tell you the beginnings of how she shot to superstardom, she could never escape. People always wanted to talk about that. Her and Ike and Tina. I mean, yeah, Ike Turner and being abused by him, like, constantly through her career. If you watch the documentary, she's doing interviews for what's that movie?
The Mad Max?
Mad Max. And they're asking her about Ike and telling her about what Ike's doing. So she didn't
get to escape it like Aretha Franklin did.
Exactly. Exactly. And really so many other people. There's countless other people who have dealt with that or been the ones to abuse people and they get to move on from it. But it just followed her throughout her career, unfortunately. So, so when she divorced him, he took everything. He took everything from money to claims to royalties of the music, just everything. The only thing that she got and that she asked for specifically was her name, Tina Turner.
She needed.
Exactly. So after that, she is just pretty much kind of out here on her own. And she talks about in the documentary how she would just take any gig because she needed money to put food on the table. So she did a lot of Vegas shows. She did some TV specials. She did a special with Cher, another one with Olivia Newton-John. And she did release two albums. They were both unsuccessful in 1978 and 1979. And when the last one just flopped, she was dropped by the label. And she's just kind of like, all right, where do I go from here? So she finds herself a woman in her early 40s, needing a job, again, to put food on the table and provide for her family, but also not ready to hang up her performing shoes. So this guy, Roger Davies, comes to her aid, and he jumps on board as her manager. And together, they start working on shifting her image into the rock and roll artist that she wants to be. Because they talk about in the documentary, he asked her, like, what do you want to be? How do you see yourself? And she's like, I want to be the first Black female rock star to sell out stadiums like the Stones. And she will eventually sell out those stadiums even more than the Stones ever did. And so that's what they start working towards, changing her image. And along with the image is getting together a song. So also they had to secure a record contract for her with Capitol Records. That was really tough to do because she says how nobody wanted to work with her because they're like, this 40-year-old woman, what are we going to do with her? You know, how's she going to sell? Even actually, they talk about in the documentary, there was finally this guy at Capitol Records who was like, I'm going to get behind you. I believe in you. But then they had a huge shift in management, kind of. So all these new guys came in and they were like, actually, it's really disgusting. The guy called that one of the new guys told the other guy, are you the person who signed this N-word douchebag? Speaking about Tina Turner. And he's like, yeah, like, I believe in her. Like we're keeping her on the roster. And he really fought for her. And so they kept her. And they're just like, well, we're not doing anything. Like, this is all on you. We're going to barely give you money. But you can see what you can do. Well, they did a whole lot, to say the least. So they're putting together these songs. Davies, again, Tina's manager, he sent her this song, What's Love Got to Do With It, that he got from some friends of his, songwriters Terry Britton and Graham Lyle. And though he was hopeful about it, Tina didn't exactly feel the same. I thought What's Love could be a big song, he said. But he says Tina never really liked it. It was terrible. It was awful. Tina laughs upon recalling her first impression of the tune. I was rock and roll. This was a pop song. So at the time, the song had actually been demoed by the popular British pop band Bucks Fizz. And if you go listen to their version, it's not bad, but it's definitely a much whiter, bland take on the tune. And it was intended to go on their upcoming album, but it was shelved after Tina released hers.
What's love got to do with it? What's love got to do with it? What's love?
It's very like white 80s pop. like
just, what's love?
literally So again, you know, Tina heard the song and she's like, what, I don't like this. But Davies is like, just go, just meet with Britton, one of the writers. And he's like, you know, if you, you know, maybe you guys can come up with something, change things up. She came in and immediately said, well, you know, I don't like that song. I don't want to do that song. Roger wants me to do it, Britton recalls. I said, if it doesn't work out, we won't use it. So let's give it a go. So Tina went in the booth and just completely put her own stamp on it. I applied my heavy voice to it, she says. They weren't used to a strong voice standing on top of music, but I converted it and made it my own. I was stunned, Britton says, after hearing her recording. So they did it. Tina knocked it out of the park. They changed a few music things, musical parts, and you get what we have today. So the single was released on May 1st, 1984. And she shot a video for the song that was directed by Mark Robinson. And in the video, she's walking around New York City. She's big hair, high heels, short skirt, red lipstick. And MTV put it into heavy rotation. And so for a whole generation, this was their first time hearing, seeing Tina Turner. They're like, oh, who is this woman? On May 15th, and remember this part, she went on tour with Lionel Richie. She was his opening act for his Can't Slow Down tour. And she started each set with What's Love Got to Do with It. And then on May 29th, the album, her album Private Dancer, that What's Love Got to Do with It is on, was released. So she it's a churn. I don't want to say a slow churn, because on September 1st, the song hit number one on Billboard. So it was, you know, a few months. And it stayed there for three consecutive weeks. And she set a record, because she's 44 at the time, and she set a record for becoming the oldest female solo artist ever to top the chart. And she also set a record for longest time between first song to chart and first number one hit. So her first song that charted was I Was a Fool in Love, that she did with Ike in 1960, and that was 24 years earlier. Mm-hmm. But both of those records were broken by Cher, who was 52 when her song Believe went to number one in 1998. And then also as well, her first chart hit was in 1965 with I Got You Babe, when she was a part of Sonny and Cher.
Yeah, but so you brought up those timelines. So she's an older black woman. No one
doing
knows
rock and
her.
Roll music.
She's just somebody. And then just a few months later, in those times, because we're not with powers of internet or anything, a few months later, boom. So yeah, it's a considerable feat to go from nobody to somebody and to be in that category that's not, like, you know, young, whatever.
But see, I always use her as an example of people like good music. If the music is good, right? Nobody cares if you're 40 or if you're 50.
Like, so a producer shouldn't be afraid to sell good music. If the music is good, all you got to do is sell it right.
Yeah.
Give it a good music video. Give it a good color. Give that album some flair. Boom. People are going to like it because it's good.
That's
true.
They're not like, oh, this person isn't 25, so we don't want this. Like, no, she's on the charts at the same time Madonna is blowing up. Mm-hmm. So again, the song blows up and literally is the rocket ship that catapults her into superstardom. At the second, only the second, MTV Video Music Awards in 1985, the video for What's Love won Best Female Video. But then at the Grammys that year, it won three awards, including Song of the Year, Record of the Year, and Best Female Vocal Performance. So she took home the two of the big three, because the only other one was Album of the Year. That's the other.
What's his name? Was like, see, like the guy was pushing, exactly. He was pushing the record label company. Was like, ah, and then she was like, with Tina Turner, she was like, just do it. And she was like, okay. And then he was like, see, God damn it, give me one of those Grammys. I'm going home with him.
Well, no, she does. She actually, in her speech, if you go, you can go watch it. It's also in the documentary, but I'm sure you can find it on YouTube. She literally says, like, this Grammy is going to my manager, Roger Davies, because he is the one pushing me and standing up for me when no one else was. So not only was the song a hit, the album was a huge critical and some commercial success, sold over 20 million albums worldwide, which I'm sure it's way more than that now. I actually had that album on vinyl too, and that really was my introduction to Tina Turner, like musically, that Private Dancer album. I just knew of her, but then I really got into it. So like I said, she did have a movie of her life in 1993. They used the title of that song for it. And yeah, that she just went on to kill it and have so many other hits. That was her only number one, but she's had multiple top 10 hits. So her second album after that, just some fun facts. Her second album after Private Dancer was Break Every... This isn't her literal second album, but the follow-up album, I should say, to Private Dancer was Break Every Rule. And she had a huge world tour for that. And in 1988, she did a show in Rio de Janeiro, which to this day remains the largest paying concert audience for a female artist. There was over 180,000 attendees. So talk about
Brazilians party, dude.
apparently mm-hmm. and they have video of all this too, so you can go see it, and it's wow. So she got those, she did what she wanted to do. She got the stadium crowds like the Stones and even more. Also, I mentioned earlier how she had opened for Lionel Richie right as things were starting to kick off. And in 2000, for her 24/7 tour, Lionel Richie opened for her. So, exactly. I just think that's such a... of course, for me, I feel some kind of way about it as an artist, but that's also just such a... just something to keep in the back of your head that, like, sometimes I think we get in our head and we're just like, oh, well, this person's huge and I'm never going to be where they are. And look at that. And mm-hmm. In a couple of decades, things are completely flipped. And you know, are the one that's headlining the tour, and this person is opening for you. So
no one knows the future. Just keep going.
Exactly. Just keep doing what you're doing. So that's really it. I have to admit that
my favorite is With Ike and
Proud Mary.
Proud Mary.
Oh yeah,
I think of Tina. I think about that. I want to roll down the river with her. I mean,
oh yeah, that's her. That's probably her most notable song, other than What's Love Got to Do with It.
Yeah,
Proud Mary. So,
I wish it just involved Ike, but it is what it is. Yeah. Have you seen Mad Max Thunderdome with Tina Turner?
I have not, and I need to watch it.
Hair. I mean, that is
just
80s. That completely. Fucking movie is just as 80s as it gets. Well, I'm pretty sure it was 80s.
Yeah, oh yeah, it was 85. Sure.
It was 85. Like, oh, so like, yeah, right in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Right there, smack dab in the middle. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She could fall off an airplane and land with that hair.
Oh, yeah, but even her hair, if you look at her hair at that time, just her as an artist, it was mm-hmm. huge. Just
that's what I
everything
mean.
Everything was big hair back then. Yeah. But no, great song. She also did the theme song for James Bond, GoldenEye, in the
90s. That's true. I was going to say this. Tina Turner's GoldenEye in 1995, also. Mm-hmm. She did Thunderdome, and then 10 years later she did the soundtrack to GoldenEye. One of the best, obviously, because it's Tina Turner.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And also, I just have to say, going back to the shows, she's had, I think, since that tour for that album Private Dancer, that was like her catapulted her. Each tour always was like record breaking and made like that. It was amongst like the top five of that year. Like people came out to see her over the, like I said, all the way to 2000. In 2000, she's still, I think she did her last tour in 2008. But she was still doing stadium tours. This isn't like some small little venue. Like, Tina Turner is the blueprint for Beyonce. Go watch any of her concert, from the dresses to the way she just moves. And she wasn't even doing choreographed. She wasn't doing choreographed. No, she wasn't doing choreographed dances.
Choreographed.
The way Beyonce. Yeah.
Yeah.
She wasn't doing choreographed dances the way Beyonce is, but she's just moving on stage. And like, I'm watching it from a television. I can only imagine what it's like to be there. You can literally just feel the energy coming off of her. And so, yeah, I was just watching it just like, oh yeah, like she's the blueprint for Beyonce and that big stage presence and just moving and having the crowd. So yeah, it was because I only say that to say that some people try and make it seem like Beyonce's doing what no one's ever done since Michael Jackson. And I'm like, no,
she's the first black woman.
Yeah. Go.
Period.
yeah, exactly. Exactly. There were none before her. None. No, literally. That's, yeah. I'm like, no, go watch. You don't even have to watch the whole thing. Just watch some clips from Tina Turner performances. And yeah, that's her blueprint. So, Tina's amazing. And shout out to Tina, who is now a citizen of Switzerland. She got out of this crazy country.
What? Jealous.
And she's just chilling over there with her husband.
I need a foreign
Tina
passport.
You'll probably never hear this, but if by any chance you do, I love you. You are loved. We here at Ants Human Stars love you.
You could say that maybe you're just simply the best.
Simply the best. There you go.
Some say better than all the rest.
Better than anyone. Anyone I've ever met. Yes.
Golden eye, not lace, so leather. Today, I'm going to be doing my true crime on Ecocide. What's Ecocide?
What is Ecocide?
We'll get into that. And okay. For my report, I'm going to be citing from ABC News, BBC News, Time Magazine, Canadian Association of Petroleum Producers website, Interaction, a Philippine news outlet, okay. Science Direct, website filled with scientific peer reviewed journal crap, and the New York Times. I do research, girl. I was pulling all these numbers. Okay. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Am I ready? Okay.
To learn all about Ecocide.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I kind of have an idea. I feel like I have an idea.
Mm-hmm. In 1948, after Nazi Germany. What? In 1948, after Nazi Germany exterminated millions of Jews and other minorities during World War II, the United Nations adopted a convention establishing a new crime so heinous it demanded collective action. Genocide, the nations declared, was to be condemned by the civilized world, and they justified intervention in the affairs of sovereign states. Now, world leaders, including Pope Francis and French President Emmanuel Macron, began citing an offense they say poses a similar threat to humanity and remains beyond the reach of international criminal law, and that is ecocide, aka the widespread destruction of the environment. So, Pope Francis, he made a speech at the World Congress of the International Association of Penal Law. That was in 2019. And before I get into the part of what he says about the environment, I want to read the opening he gave at this speech because it's hilarious. So he gets up. He's okay. Like, distinguished ladies and gentlemen, I know the Pope is Argentinian, but I'm going to give him an Italian. Okay. First of all, I want to apologize for the delay.
He made the Pope a pizza man.
I am a sorry.
Literally, he gonna be serving them little wafers with pepperonis on them. Like, body of Christ and a pepperoni. Like,
can I get a small cheese?
Exactly.
I'm sorry, it was a scheduling error. Two major appointments together. What happened was the opposite of what happened in the book of Joshua. There, the sun went backwards. Here, the clock, the sun went ahead. Excuse me and thank you for your patience. Leave it to the Pope to excuse his tardiness and throw out some like biblical joke in front of, you know, it's like I would have been laughing so hard. I'm like, the Pope is trying to throw a joke from the Bible. Okay. He's late. Everybody gets over it. An elementary sense. Oh, he continues. What he says about the environment is, quote, an elementary sense of justice would require that certain conduct for which corporations are usually responsible does not go unpunished. In particular, all those that can be considered as ecocide, the massive contamination of air, land, and water resources, the large-scale destruction of flora and fauna, and any action capable of producing an ecological disaster or destroying an ecosystem. We must introduce, we're thinking about it, in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, the sin against ecology, the ecological sin against the common home, because it's a duty. Do they have to prove the sins? Do they send an email to God? Did they get that approval process?
Right.
Uh-huh. Anyway, recently the Synod Fathers are in the Christian Catholic Church. A Synod is a local or provincial assembly of bishops and other church officials meeting to resolve questions of discipline or administration. So the Synod Fathers of the Pan-Amazon region, which includes countries of Bolivia, Brazil, Colombia, Ecuador, French Guiana, Peru, Venezuela, and Suriname, most of which are countries which have Catholic populations, they propose to define ecological sin as an action or omission against God, against one's neighbor, the community, and the environment. It is a sin against future generations and is manifested in acts and habits of pollution and destruction of the harmony of the environment, in transgressions against the principles of interdependence, and in the breaking of networks of solidarity between creatures. This is the fifth category of crimes against peace, which should be recognized as such by the international community. Well, who the Pope is saying, look, this is bad, we're going to make it a sin. Cool. The Pope has also endorsed a campaign by environmental activists and legal scholars to make ecocide the fifth crime before the International Criminal Court in The Hague, that's in the Netherlands, as a legal deterrent to the kinds of far-reaching environmental damages that are driving mass extinction, ecological collapse, and climate change. The International Criminal Court, the ICC, is the first only permanent international court with jurisdiction to prosecute individuals for the international crimes of genocide, crimes against humanity, war crimes, crimes of aggression. Now they want political leaders and corporate executives to face charges and imprisonment for ecocide now too. One note about the ICC. The ICC lacks universal jurisdiction. They may only investigate and prosecute crimes committed within its member states, crimes committed by the nationals of member states, and crimes in situations referred to the court by the United Nations Security Council. So it's not 100% as it should be, but just giving you the scope of their power, they can't really prosecute the entire world. To make their case, advocates point to the Amazon, where fires raged out of control in 2019 and where the rainforest may now be so degraded it's spewing out more climate-warming gases than it draws in. At the poles, human activity is thawing a frozen Arctic and destabilizing the ice sheets of Greenland and Antarctica. Across the globe, climate change is disrupting the reliable seasonal rhythms that have sustained human life for millennia, while hurricanes, floods, and other climate-driven disasters have forced more than 10 million people from their homes in just the last 6 months. One of those natural disasters was Typhoon Goni, known locally in the Philippines as Super Typhoon Rolly. It hit the Philippines and Vietnam in the early morning, November 1st, last year, 2020, with 195-mile-per-hour sustained winds, making Goni / Rolly the strongest landfalling tropical cyclone in history.
Wow.
Permanently retiring the name Rolly from the PAGASA, which is the Philippine Atmospheric Geophysical and Astronomical Services Administration. That tends to happen, like, if a hurricane, like, fucking destroys, like, Hurricane Katrina. There will be never be another Hurricane Katrina, because they're like, too much damage, retiring that name. And we know where these disasters come from. I mean, consumption of fossil fuels, nuclear energy, the meat industry. Not always right up there. You're like, you're thinking like, oh, fossil fuels, nuclear, meat. Yeah, meat.
Yeah, and the gases that are produced when they're
chopping these things up. I didn't get into it, but I mean, yeah, it's not just like the gases from their farts, but like,
well, no, from the factories, like the factories that mass produce. They're cutting them up, like.
But
okay, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm gonna listen to you.
Cows and pigs produce methane gas from farts. I mean, that's just the thing. Yeah. Like, and when you concentrate them, that's the issue. But they don't live in a vacuum. You have to feed them. And where does this food come from? From fields dedicated just to feed them. And what do you do with the meat afterwards? Well, you have to ship them. That's shipping costs and refrigeration, and it's one cow, you know, and I'm a meat eater, so I'm not like advocating stopping to eat meat, but awareness is great. And I don't know what to do with it, but awareness is great. So, and I don't like to be completely unaware, you know, and I'm also not an idiot. I've grown up my whole life knowing that we as a species, we're just no good for every other species on this planet. Damage to nature has become so freaking extensive and widespread around the world in ways that I could never have imagined when I was a kid, nor dare think it was possible it could get there. When I was a kid, I always thought, I always thought that, like, there's somebody who's got this shit under control. That some scientist somewhere, they're taking care of this. But reality is really harsh. And so, without any particular order, here's a few things we've done. Here's the report card. The Chernobyl disaster in Russia that affected the lives of millions in Asia and Europe. Still happening. Fukushima Daiichi nuclear disaster has and will affect us, especially now that Japan will release all of that radioactive water directly into the ocean. This just announced that a few days ago, by the way. Tar sands of northern Canada, just found this out about, where toxic waste pits and strip mines have replaced 400 square miles of boreal forest and boglands. The issue with this is that producing fuels from the area release three times as much greenhouse gases as conventional crude oil does. Speaking of oil, the Gulf of Mexico and the site of the Deepwater Horizon disaster that killed 11 people spilled out at least 168 million gallons of crude oil into the ocean over 87 days and killed countless of marine animals, sea turtles, fish, and migratory birds. It is still leaking. The motherfucking Amazon rainforest, where rapid deforestation now encouraged by Brazilian President Bolsonaro, is causing the region to warm up fast. And if instead of protecting the rainforest and having it produce O2, you cut down the trees, burn them trees, release billions of metric tons of carbon, instead, we know what greenhouse gas we know what greenhouse gases do. So, okay. P.S. Cattle accounts for 80% of the deforested land in Amazon. Basically, they're cutting down the rainforest for burgers.
Mm.
That's shitty. Yeah. But it is what it is. It's more profitable to have land with cattle than trees. And let's not forget,
that's what we need to survive.
Right, but I mean, you know, I'm not going to present any solutions in this presentation.
No, that was just a comment.
That's just a comment. You know, I'm not going to stop eating burgers, but if you present to me solutions or if you make burgers more expensive, I might eat burgers less, and I'll accept it. I'll accept if my burger is $20, and I'll pay $20 to have that burger. But if you're trying to save the world, go do it. Make it happen. You know, I mean, you did it with cigarettes. You did it with other things. Do it for this, or just eliminate or replace whatever it is you need to do to fix the issue. I'm going to sign up. I don't care about the burger enough to have the whole world die because I need a burger. You know, anyways, that's the way I feel about it. Anyway, and let's not forget the Great Smog of 1952. Where thousands of Londoners died because it got really cold and everybody fired up the coal stoves and, well, you can imagine. And, you know, I'm talking about like 10,000 people died.
One city. I learned about that on the Crown.
Because of coal. Let's not bring back coal. That's not a thing. That's not the future. So there's a campaign to criminalize ecocide, and it's moving out from the fringes of society. But we still have to navigate tensions over whether national governments or the international community have ultimate control over natural resources. And they're likely to face opposition from countries with high carbon emissions and deep ties to industrial development, U.S. and China. Speaking of the U.S., the concept of ecocide was born over a period of 10 years when the United States government sprayed 19 million gallons of powerful herbicides, including Agent Orange, across the countryside in Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos to expose enemy sanctuaries during the Vietnam War. We're talking about spraying down the jungle, killing plant life so that you can see the enemy. That's what they were doing. These dioxin-laced chemicals not only defoliated the jungle, but they cause cancer, neurological disease, birth defects, death. Not a surprise. I mean, remember that black dude and the weed killer Roundup made by Bayer / Monsanto, and he like won that lawsuit? Imagine go ahead.
I was just gonna say, in relation to the Agent Orange, my grandma's brother died from that. Like, he went to war, and a lot of them did, but that's my personal connection to that is, yeah, my grandma's brother died from Agent Orange, from being over there. Them spraying that, he came back over here, and yeah, that gets all in your lungs and all that stuff. You're breathing that in.
Not a surprise, because you're talking about like Bayer, Monsanto making weed killer. You know, it's a legitimate business here. You're trying to make weed killer, and unfortunately, it has something that's killing people. Now give them the task of just kill the entire rainforest. Who gives a shit? You know, just make something that's going to kill everything and no consequences. I don't give a crap. Just make it work. Holy shit. Who knows what that chemical was like? You know? While the number of victims is disputed, Vietnamese groups claim that there are more than 3 million victims from this attack. So, in 1970, Yale biologist Arthur Galston called out this mess. He brought it onto the world stage and demanded to outlaw ecocide. 20 years later, the global community came together to form the International Criminal Court, which was formally established in 2002 under a treaty called the Rome Statute, set up to prosecute genocide, crimes against humanity, crimes of aggression, war crimes. within its member countries, which currently number 123 countries. There's a 123 countries part of the International Criminal Court. Early drafts of the Roman statute included the crime of environmental destruction, but it was removed after opposition from the United States, the United Kingdom, and the Netherlands, based on various concerns, including that it wasn't precisely defined. As a result, international criminal law includes few guardrails to prevent environmental destruction. There's a big gap, and something needs to fill it, said Badenoch, an attorney at the Environmental Law Institute. We currently cannot hold big corporations or big governments accountable for ecocide, he added. So what do? We name them and we shame them. We name and shame. That's all we got. China, the United States, India, and Russia, four of the world's top polluters, are not members of the International Criminal Court. But if a corporation based in either China, the US, India, or Russia were to operate within a member state, as many of them do, their executives could fall under the court's jurisdiction. So December 2019, Vanuatu and the Maldives, two island nations threatened by rising seas and climate change-driven extreme weather, they said, our legacy and our future are at stake, Vanuatu's ambassador to the European Union, John Licht, told the court, stressing a common bond that united all the world's people. Our lives are intertwined by the environment we live in. Willie Massek, who has served as part of Vanuatu's delegation to the United Nations climate negotiations, said diplomats from other countries expressed shock when the little tiny Vanuatu, a remote archipelago of more than 80 islands in the South Pacific, said it wanted to take on global powers and the fossil fuel industry through the courts. The fact that corporations can continue to profit from carbon emissions that are threatening this country's future, Missick said, makes the legal case super clear. It's not right, he said, and that's where the justice comes in. In December 2020, Belgian Foreign Minister Sophie Wilmès asked International Criminal Court member states to examine the possibility of adopting ecocide as a crime. A member of Belgium's parliament has also expressed a bill to criminalize ecocide. French lawmakers are working on legislation to make ecocide an offense punishable by fines in prison, though some criticize the bill as weak. At least 10 countries have national ecocide laws already, including Vietnam, not a surprise, which enacted the law back in 1990. 1990, Vietnam has had an ecocide law. The rest of the world is just like, should we?
Exactly. Head in the clouds.
Separately, French lawyers in January filed a request on behalf of Amazonian indigenous groups asking the International Criminal Court to investigate Bolsonaro of Brazil for crimes against humanity. The appeal alleges that deforestation encouraged by Bolsonaro's government and other policies have forced indigenous people from their homes and even led to murders in the region. While the campaign for ecocide law could take years, it may not be successful at all. As of July 1st, 2020, at least 1,550 climate change cases have been filed in 38 countries, according to a UN report. In Vanuatu, though, there is a sense that the pace of climate change is beginning to outrun the country's ability to adapt. Cyclones have devastated the islands, and they're expected to intensify as the globe continues to warm. Some effects of climate change run much deeper, though, than damage from storms. Most of Vanuatu's residents depend on the crops they grow and the fish they catch, so their lives are intertwined with the environment around them. Recently, though, the harvest of yams, a key crop that is already stressed by changes in the climate, was disrupted, throwing it out of alignment with seasonal and celestial markers and accompanying rituals that normally tell farmers when to reap. One day, we will talk about how we use the stars and our rituals with them. but it will never be the same spirit or have the same soul, Miss X said. And that loss, none of the money in this world can pay for it. Resource extraction powers the global economy. It is what it is. And with it comes practices that destroy Earth's ecosystems. Drilling, trawling, mining, logging, fertilizing, power producing, heating, cooling, driving. And the results. The Arctic is disappearing. Ice sheets in Greenland and Antarctica are melting. The jet stream is wobbling. The Gulf Stream is weakening. From a single degree of Celsius of warming, an unfathomable amount of energy is now trapped on the planet and wreaking havoc on the reliable seasonal rhythms that have sustained human life for millennia. If you adjust your thermostat 1 degree, you'll feel the difference in your home. It'll be subtle, but you'll be able to tell. Now imagine heating the entirety of the world, which is what the sun does every day, what fuels the weather. But every year, the sun is able to heat up the tropics just a bit more, raising that thermostat. Jet streams, narrow bands of very strong, predominantly westerly air currents encircling the globe several miles above the Earth. Jet streams happen at points where cold and warm air meet. The differences in temperatures is very crucial to how the jet streams form and function, directing cold and warm air around the globe and directly affecting the formation of weather, like hurricanes. The African easterly jet, generated from the differences between the hot, dry desert in North Africa and the cooler, wetter, forested coastal environment in West Africa, that jet stream then hits the warm, moist air over the Atlantic, then magic. So if the global temperatures shift, so will the jet streams. In turn, they will affect the weather patterns of wherever those jet streams go. So that sometimes will mean you'll have sunnier days. Sometimes that means you'll be slammed harder and harder with more cyclones and hurricanes. Or a sudden record-setting cold snap cuts power to the entire state of Texas. Any of those things can now happen from just subtle changes. Scientific American magazine announced yesterday, April 12th, that it would stop using the term climate change in articles about man-made global warming and substitute climate emergency instead. The planet is heating up way too fast. It's time for journalism to recognize that climate emergency is here. Why emergency? Because words matter. To preserve a livable planet, humanity must take action immediately. That is my quick overview of Ecocide. And it came up because, they're trying to introduce Ecocide, as I said, as the fifth kind of bad thing you could do within the international community, and they're trying to battle it currently, and I hope it does become one of these things that you can, you know. And I also mentioned that, you know, US, China, all of those are not part of the international community court, but there's that caveat of,
yeah, if they're doing work in the countries that are, which their executives can be,
think of Exxon. They're everywhere. They're an American company every single part of the world. Every country has some Exxon in them. So I think it'd be powerful if it does become, then you can just, if anything, just make their lives hell. You know?
And it's a way of holding people accountable of, because again, really what it comes down to, people have to, your humanity, man, your humanity. Because you have to stop focusing on money and what you're gaining and like, what is this doing as a whole? How is it affecting people? And this is negatively affecting people doing it this way. So one, you need to recognize that, you know, check your humanity. But then two, like, just because this is how things have been done does not mean this is how they have to continue. Like, there are ways to go about this, that help things, and you can still make money. But yes, that's going to take work, and it is a whole lot easier to just continue to let things be the way they are and like put it off on somebody else. Let it be somebody else's problem. It's interesting how you were saying how you were a kid and you always thought like, oh, this people were taking care of this. That's the attitude that is given, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's dealing with global ecocide or even something down just down to recycling. Like we think that like, oh yeah, somebody's taking care of that. I just put somebody's it, you somewhere. Know, drop it in the, yeah. And it's somewhere. Like, actually like no, like we have to be on top of that too.
And just like they can make the smallest errors anywhere, anyone can make errors, but you're working with such huge machines. I don't mean like little machines, but like you're pumping things out of the earth with such force, with such, you know,
mm-hmm.
fervor.
Yeah,
you cracked the Gulf of Mexico. What the fuck? I didn't even know that was a pot. That's what I mean. Like, I didn't even know you could do that. You did. You cracked something that wasn't meant to.
Yeah.
Wow. And things like nuclear power, which is doing something, getting something, and not knowing what to do with the consequences of that at all. We have no. I mean, I guess you could just ship barrels of water into space. I think that would be cool to get it off this planet. But because you didn't think of that, again, it thinks like, wait. But as a, you know, as a kid, I'm like, wait, didn't you guys think of that? Didn't you have a solution? Weren't you ever gonna? No, really? You're just
again because it's
fly by night, seat of your pants, winging
it. It's this focus on the moment. This focus mm-hmm. on the what can we get really quick, really fast,
right?
And then we'll worry about fixing it later, which really just means, again, you're going to give it to somebody else to worry about and fix. Like, mm-hmm. you're just going to get all you can for right now. And it's like I've seen pictures and documentaries about, I don't know where it is. I think it's in the Pacific, but there's that, it's a whole thing of trash just like in the ocean, and it's miles and miles long. And it's just literally.
But the thing is, there's multiple of these. Now it's just
A bunch that's of just these.
And these are like because
there's the one that's most popular.
There's current. There's like, you know, it, just like in the air, there's jet streams. There's stream. There's streams in the water. Currents. Sorry. Yeah. Currents. Mm-hmm. And well, they grab stuff and they circulate and they get to a point. And just like, you know, like, and they collect in that little area, and that's how that works. But those currents are also as important as the air currents that I talked about. So those are also being affected. And for example, and it's just that that's the thing that people don't get the scale. Like they see that like, oh, 1 degree or like one little thing. But okay, if you change the currents, that means, for example, that flow of water temperature isn't going to where it was, but that's where the sharks have been going for 50 million years to go eat. Mm-hmm. So it's no longer there. So they're going to go over here and they're going to eat up all the fish over there that they were safe from sharks for 50 million years. And they're not going to be.
And then you're changing that whole ecosystem because they never had.
You change this. And then it's just, and this is just one little thing that happens, that little change of water, that little shift of water, and that can happen so easily. It's just
but that's the thing, it's actually not little. We call it little because like you said, we're looking, we're like, oh, it's 1 degree, it's one little this.
Well, I mean, point like, this if something happens discreetly, like, oh, this little channel of water, like off the mm-hmm. coast of, you know, Peru, let's say something happens there and affects that little ecosystem, but that's happening worldwide, every little, you know, thing. And Pacific Ocean, for instance, has 660 million kilometers cubed. So that's a kilometer cubed and 660 million of those cubed kilometers in the Pacific Ocean. And the Atlantic Ocean has, you know, whatever. I don't have that data right in front of me. But anyways, so much water. And the sun must heat that water up as part of the, as part of what it does. It heats Pacific Ocean at the equator, heats the Indian Ocean, the Atlantic Ocean at the equator, and this causes, so just like in the air where cold and heat meet, that causes a jet stream, that causes some movement in the air. Same thing in the oceans, like that cold water from the North Atlantic hits the warmer waters coming out of the Caribbean, and then there's just some mix there, right? But if the waters get more hot, then the process that is that happens with this, you know, difference of water temperatures will be affected. What will happen depends on where you are. And that will cause this and that cause that and cause this and cause that. You know, it's just like...
It's just a domino effect.
Right. And we're talking about the entire oceans being up. And you're talking about, so if that entire ocean is just a little bit more warm, it's going to push up just that much more moisture into the air. Mm-hmm. The entire Pacific Ocean, the entire Atlantic Ocean pushing up that much more moisture is what we're talking about when we're lifting 1 degree. And we're going to feel it every year where those hurricanes pop in way more moisture.
I didn't know about
that. The Atlantic is much more warm. The Sahara is much more hot. And so that stream is... The airstream that's coming off the coast of Africa will be even more intense because those winds will just be more. And then the Atlantic Ocean will be filled with more moisture because that moisture is coming up because the sun is burning a little more. And that hurricane is now a category 7.
Yeah.
Like we left the 5 a long time ago. Every year it's just 4 and 5s. Now we have 6s, 7s, and 8s.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't even know about that when you were explaining that and how that affects the hurricanes. And it's... Mm-hmm.
The polar vortex that happened to Texas. So there's the jet stream that goes over the U.S., northern Atlantic, Europe, Russia. It's just this that top one, right? And there's also one at the equator with Argentina, South Africa. You know that. So there's these jet streams. And... You adjust one little thing, little thing. The Gulf of Mexico is a little bit warmer, or a little bit colder, and that's it. It was the threshold that needed to happen, so that cold air just comes down, and there's nothing to stop it because it was a delicate balance keeping it that way, and you adjusted one little thing.
Yeah, and I guess it's like really we have to take. We have to take responsibility. And when I say that, like, it's going to be on us to push for change. The people in these corporations, in these positions who are making money and more money off of these things, like, if we leave it up to them to change things, they're never going to.
We need to, that's where the focus should be. That's where we need to direct our resources to stop them. And I really want to take it off our backs. There's no amount of freaking recycling that I can do or cutting my water off when I'm brushing my teeth that's going to solve the world's problems. We individually have been told for years and years, like, turn the lights off when you got... You are dumping billions upon billions of gallons of nuclear waste, Japan, tomorrow, and you want me to turn my water off when I'm shaving my face. Shut up. Get out of here with this. It's not my responsibility to save the world's environmental problems at an individual level. I'm not the one. Stop telling me to turn my lights off. What we need to is stop these corporations that are doing these big, huge, irreversible damages that are really truly affecting. If I know, I understand that, like, collectively we all waste water, collectively we all use power and resources, but you see what I'm saying, that like it's been a tactic to center it on the individual.
Definitely. Well, and that's, and so when I say take responsibility, I mean you can call it simple or little if you want to, but when you're going to your Starbucks saying like, hey, I don't want a straw, put one of them little lids on it that I can just drink out of the lid. Like, I'm just of the mindset of like every little bit counts, and why wait for Starbucks to say we're going to outlaw straws? If they see, oh, half of 75% of the customers all of a sudden aren't using straws, then they're going to stop and giving money to buy straws. And so that's what I mean. I mean us as a collective, because like you said, they have tried to put it on us as individuals as like, this is, yes, it's our issue, but you're the people in control. You can make much bigger strides than we can. But I'm saying us as a collective, we got to hit them in their pockets. Like, that's what gets their attention when they see that, oh, they're not making money off of this, or money isn't going to this certain area anymore, then they'll be like, oh yeah, 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 we okay, fine, fine, let's change it. So,
and one of the biggest things we need to do is just redirect. And we, ever since I was born, ever since I was alive and realized and reason, knew that we needed to redirect from fossil fuels to renewable sources. I mean, this I've heard my entire freaking life. The magic school bus. I mean, everything was just renewable air and energy.
Does that happen to you? I'm finding that the older I get, the more I realize, like, oh, we think, and I'll speak for me. Everything that's happening and that people are talking about, from social justice issues to climate, this is not new. They were talking about this 30, 40, 50 years ago. Now I'm just becoming aware of it. But these aren't conversations that all of a sudden just popped up. And it's like, oh, this is new.
And it makes me mad that you haven't fixed it. Like, what have you been doing? I was a child. Leave me alone. I had to grow up. You know, and I'm here and I'm at the party and the freaking house is on fire. And it's been on fire since I came out of my mom's vajayjay. And I'm like, why?
But again, that's the mindset. The mindset is, we'll give it to somebody else. Let the next generation deal with it, or the generation after that. Like, it's this putting off, which again I think is gross. It's very gross. But yeah, I get upset. I'm like, what were y'all doing before I got here? like what was going on? But you know what? I have to say though, to kind of end on a well, we don't have to end here, but to give a uplifting perspective, we did see just this past year during when the pandemic hit that if we stop doing all these things, things can recover rapidly.
It's possible. Yeah.
100%. We saw where how once everybody kind of shut down and they weren't driving and they weren't doing all this stuff, things rapidly started to fix themselves. Mm-hmm. So it is not impossible to do. It's not we're not too late. We're too late in some senses, but we can. It's not the end of the world yet. We still have the possibility to change things and turn things around. We just needed
people have done harder things. Mm-hmm. Isn't that hard? We're talking about like replacing energies. We're talking about like, can we get a car with this? Can we get a house with that? Can we get a city planner that does this? Can we, you know, adjust our lives that take us away from this to that? And it's not like, can I raise 4 kids by myself? Can I, refugee immigrate to another country? I mean, these are like impossible tasks. Can I survive in America as a black man? These are impossible tasks. Mm-hmm. Whereas I see the route to healing our environment so very easy. Like,
it's definitely doable. It's doable.
It doesn't require emotion. It doesn't require so much of it. It just requires action.
Action.
Just
exactly. Action.
Action. Like,
just got to do what you got to do what you got to do.
Done. You know. And if you could, if it were to happen, if I just pushed a button and everybody just started working today, by next week we're so close. By 2 weeks, we'd be like, there'd be freaking solar panels everywhere. There'd be wind. There would be, we're trying to build into.
And we have the resources and the ingenuity.
Yeah,
and
we got all of it. We just start doing it.
Yeah.
And we could. Yeah. We could do it. And
but there has to be that want there to put aside your immediate need, or excuse me, your immediate want for, again, these material things, monetary value, all that, to do something that's going to just help everyone.
We'll see where it goes. I mean, obviously, we're the frog in a boiling pot of water that's boiling slowly. And I hope it doesn't take like a tornado in the White House to be like, environmental change probably is necessary for our. But
exactly. That's another, again, man. We gotta check your humanity. We had to get out of this place of only wanting to be affected, not wanting to, of only being affected when it affects
it hits
us.
It hits
yeah.
us personally.
When it hits like, us, yeah, then it's like, oh, okay. All right, let's, it's like, no, you should have been doing that when it was affecting these other people over here or affecting this thing over here.
I finally had my own baby. I think we should have maternity leave, said all these conservatives this year. They were like, yeah. There was a recent one who was like, same thing. He was like, oh, I you know, whatever. I didn't really, and now I'm fighting for maternity leave for men. And, you know, it's like, must it always affect you personally for you to like just empathically make decisions, exactly. especially as a political leader? Like, why does mm-hmm. it have to be directly you? Mm-hmm. It always must be affecting you directly. I don't believe in, you know, this. I don't believe in that, but my whole population needs it, but I don't believe in it.
Yeah, exactly. Selfish.
Anywho, so the takeaway is, get yourself a copy of Tina Turner's
Private Dancer album.
Private Dancer yes. album.
Yes.
Or at least listen to it on Spotify.
Go stream, exactly.
Or Spotify, Apple Music or wherever you listen. And again, you heard how I feel about responsibility with the environment. I do all the things that you normally do, but I think the real thing that's going to do anything is just try to be there wherever eco side comes up now in our future. So if it's in your local government and if it's in higher government, whatever bills that come up that environmental, mm-hmm. you vote.
Yeah,
yes,
we gotta pay attention.
Yes, if it costs you yeah. more, great. Like whatever yeah. it is, it and it might mean that we are gonna have to bear the brunt of this cost as the middle and lower class. So
as we always do. Yeah. Also, stop littering, man. I saw somebody literally. I'm serious. I meant to make a status on a face. Like, some of y'all out here are just trash. I literally was 2 weeks ago. I saw somebody throw an entire pizza box out the window. I'm driving behind them, and they just threw an entire pizza box just on the sidewalk next to out of the window of the car and just drove by. And then, like again, I saw several other people just throwing. This was later on, like a few days later, just stuff out of the way. Like, what kind of people are you? Who raised y'all?
You know, that
like,
little...
just wait. Is it really going to kill you to let it sit in the car until you can get to a trash can?
You know, that little road understand. That goes to my parents' house, you know, that final road right before the cul-de-sacs or whatever. There's so much McDonald's trash, 7-Eleven trash, all that trash from Saratoga, like all those, like, areas there's always trash there. This is forever, and it's that thing. It's like you come back from the, you roll down your window, you just chuck a whole bag of McDonald's out the window. Not just like I can not let just slide
a napkin,
yeah, a little thing, you know.
Nah, I'm not letting none of y'all slide. Okay, you can hold that napkin in the car, yes.
But a bag full of trash.
But yes, come on. I got
you're going to your house. There's a trash can in there.
I just, it's okay. You can say it's me, Deco. If it's me, it's me. But I just don't understand that logic of, oh, we're just throwing trash. Okay, that's what we're doing. We're just throwing trash out all our trash out the window. Like, okay. If that's the world we're living in, all right.
Can you remember? You were there, but back in the day. See, and you know what? I can't say it's one particular demographic over the other. But I will say that the Americas were a lot cleaner before white people came. Just saying.
Of course.
A lot cleaner. Of course. And we're talking about white people who came over and were like, ooh, I had a really nasty poo, and you know where I'm going to put it? I'm going to open that window, and I'm going to chuck it right out that window. I'm going to see, look at that green-ass, disgusting poo on the sidewalk. Ew, I hope nobody steps on that. That was life for, like, hundreds of years over there on the other side of the water, and they were like, hey, let's go to India. And then the world fucked.
That's a whole nother conversation. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, y'all, listen to Tina. Watch Zack Snyder's Justice League along with Ray of the Last Dragon.
Fight for what you love.
fight for what you love, check your humanity, and stop throwing stuff out the window. Gosh. Find a trash can.